next case this afternoon is Mitchell versus Mansfield.
May it please the court, opposing counsel, my name is Courtney Hage, and I'm here along with my co-counsel, Terry Waite, and we appear today on behalf of the appellant, Mr. Houston Mansfield. While there are multiple assignments of error we could discuss today, we are kind of constrained for time, so we're going to focus mainly on 3 points. The first argument I'd like to bring to your attention today is that the trial court erred in relying solely on appellee's expert when determining the value of the HVAC company owned by the parties, Mansfield Enterprises, Inc. Ms. Heiser, appellee's expert, admitted in her testimony that the reports she relied upon in coming to her conclusion were faulty. Her assistant, Ms. Wolkenauer, admitted that she did not verify any of the numbers used in calculating EBITDA, which stands for Earnings Before Interest, Taxes, Depreciation, and Amortization. In fact, Ms. Wolkenauer admitted when she looked through the financials herself for personal expenses, she only found $9,600 worth of personal expenses, but instead she relied on numbers reaching $120,000 to $130,000, which included expenses for things like safety goggles and other expenses you would expect an employer to provide. In Ms. Heiser's report, Schedule 10 of Exhibit 67, she goes through a process meant to verify the accuracy of her valuation, which she refers to as the Rules of Thumb Test. When Ms. Heiser applied her own test to her $1.69 million valuation, her valuation failed 2 out of the 3 tests. That's a 33%. In my experience, that's a failing grade. Mr. Mansfield produced at trial Exhibit 175, which provided for a value of approximately $580,000 for MEI. While we understand the court had to make a decision regarding the value of the company, we submit that the court erred in so blindly relying on a report that contradicted itself, admittedly depended on faulty numbers, and failed 2 of its 3 own tests of reliability.
The Exhibit 175 was what?
It is a report from Mr. Mansfield's expert regarding the valuation of MEI.
But that expert did not testify?
No, Your Honor.
And there were certain portions of the report that were not received in evidence. Do I recall that correctly?
I believe so, Your Honor.
And did the Heiser and her assistant, did that testimony show that there was information requested from Mr. Mansfield to better complete their valuation that wasn't provided to them?
There was. They requested it in person, and Mr. Mansfield did what he could to get to them. But frankly, there was other avenues where they could have gotten more information as well. Ms. Heiser admitted in her report, Exhibit 67, that had they even completed an audit, they could have gotten more accurate numbers. But further, Dr. Mitchell's attorney could have done a motion to compel and chose not to. And they chose to rely on this faulty information in creating this report.
Did Heiser testify that the report was prepared in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles?
Yes, she did. But again, when she verified the accuracy of her valuation, it failed 2 of the 3 tests. In using averages from databases for businesses of this type. So the second argument that I'd like to put forward today is that the trial court erred in using valuation dates not rationally related to the property composing the marital estate. The trial court has discretion in valuing marital estates. However, the date of valuation needs to be rationally related to the property. The parties separated in 2010. When valuating the property, the court used dates spanning from 2010 to 2015. In Mr. Mansfield's retirement accounts alone, the court used valuation dates spanning 4 years. Mr. Mansfield testified that it's likely that some of the assets could have been counted twice, and this is because assets from earlier those accounts had closed and that money had been moved into later accounts.
But did he provide specific evidence about those accounts and how they may or may not have been moved into different accounts?
He didn't provide specific evidence. He had handwritten notes, which were what was given as exhibits. But he did testify. And then, again, the court used valuation dates that span such a period of time that there's no, they should have picked one date.
Well, did the court have values? I mean, say they had picked a certain year. Did the court have values for all of the assets for that particular year?
I believe so. They were listed out as accounts by the year with the values for that year. And again, like I said, the accounts could have closed and those amounts could have been moved to a different account. We don't have that information directly, unfortunately, other than Mr. Mansfield's testimony. But it seems probable from the fact that in 2010, the accounts valued $253,000, and then 5 years later in 2015, they were up to $915,000. So by adding all of those accounts together, it just seems excessive at that point. And in this case, the real estate was valued in 2010.
But there wasn't any other valuation given, was there, for the real estate?
For the real estate? Mm-hmm. I don't believe so. But like I said, it was valued in 2010, which was the date of separation. Mm-hmm. Then the business itself, the Heiser report, was done in 2010, and that valuation was done then. So it would just follow a logical conclusion that the retirement accounts would also be valued in 2010, the date of separation.
Is it logical if the court has evidence before it as to what the more current valuation of those accounts is?
I don't know if it's necessarily current that they need to rely on. It's they pick a date of the valuation. Mm-hmm. And the date in 2010 is when the parties were separated, so that's rationally related. It's a logical date to pick, and that's what they picked for everything else. So it seems that that's what they would pick for this as well.
Does the case law say it has to be the same date for all the assets?
It doesn't say it has to be the same date. It just states that it has to be rationally related. And so I would say that the 2010 date is the most rationally related date to pick. So the third argument that I'd like to bring today is that the trial court erred in its classification of the Mansfield Family Ranch, which is located in Sioux County, Nebraska, as entirely marital property. I'm going to refer the court specifically to pages 12 through 16 of the appellant's brief for a detailed explanation of the chain of title. But again, we would argue that this property was inherited and should have been set aside as non-marital property.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but to cut through the chase of all the transactions, Mr. Mansfield and his brother owned the property before, and
yes,
the brother then deeded his interest to the Mansfields together, Mr. and Mrs.
Yes, so...
And then half of it was owned just by Mr. Mansfield.
Yeah. I could probably simplify it a little bit. I think you kind of got it down. But yeah, Kelly Mansfield deeded his one-half interest in a certain portion to Mr. Mansfield and Dr. Mitchell jointly as husband and wife.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, there's a portion that's half owned by Mr. Mansfield, mm-hmm. Undivided interest, and the other half interest is Mr. Mansfield and Dr. Mitchell as husband and wife.
The trial court treated all of it as
treated
marital.
The entire site.
And was
property.
That based upon some testimony about that was the intent of the parties when there had been a previous separation or difficulty and this was consideration for remaining together?
Yes, so the appellee is alleging that there was a verbal agreement,
mm-hmm.
Whereby she would receive 50% interest in all of Mr. Mansfield's interest in the property. However, she completely failed to prove that this exists. This oral argument exists at all. There's no written proof at all in any of the deeds that this exists. And other than the testimony of Dr. Mitchell herself, there's no other testimony that admits that this exists.
Did Mr. Mansfield not testify to that?
He did not. Actually, he was asked a very long, convoluted question about the agreement, which ended with, "Do you recall this transaction?" And he simply said, "I recall it."
Didn't
so,
he testify that he was trying to keep a marriage together and trying to keep a family together, and that's why he did the transfer?
He admitted that he was trying to keep his family together, but he never admitted that he did the transfer because of that. He admitted that He had the conversation, but he never admitted that the agreement existed. I would like to reserve the rest of my time for you. Sure.
And may it please the court, counsel. My name is Andrea Miller, and I'm from Simmons Olson Law Firm out in Scottsbluff, Nebraska. So thank you for coming to Broken Bow. I got to drive down beautiful Highway 2 to come and see you all today. I want to start by addressing the Sioux County property. We believe that Sioux County property is indeed a marital asset based on, I think Judge Reedman had talked about and kind of touched upon, the agreement between Colleen Mitchell and Houston Mansfield that the entirety of the Sioux County Ranch would be a marital asset, and meaning that Houston Mansfield was going to gift to her, to his wife, his half interest in the property in order to stay after a 2007 affair was recognized and noticed. And after that,
I would agree, though, that the deeds as they exist at the time of trial didn't reflect that.
I would agree with that.
Other than that little piece that they bought after the marriage.
Correct. I would agree that the deeds do not reflect that. I would also tell you that Ms. Mitchell herself testified that the deeds do not reflect the intent of the parties, and that at the time that those deeds were prepared, they were prepared incorrectly based on what she had been told by her husband, which was the true intent of the parties. And not only did that 2007 transaction occur, but then a later 2010 transaction occurred, and that's really, I think, the most important one. Because in 2010, the parties, after separating, and I think that's important, after separating from their current divorce, purchased another 160 acres. And Ms. Mitchell testifies, there's no way I would have exerted more funds and purchased more property if the true intent of the both of us was not that I would be a half owner of this entire 740 acres. So I think that's very important. The other thing that I think is really important in this case is Mr. Mansfield makes no claim that he wants this property awarded to him. He just is claiming an interest in the inherited money. So it's just the value of this property that we're talking about, not whether or not it should be awarded to Ms. Mitchell, which I think is important in terms of the argument and discussion about the gift to the parties, or to my client.
Well, but half of the value of the Sioux County property is fairly significant.
It is fairly significant.
And it would make a big difference in the division, wouldn't it?
It would. It would, Your Honor. The next thing that I want to talk about is the expert report, the Heiser report submitted. And in this case, Judge O'Gorman chose to side with Erica Heiser in terms of her valuation of the business MEI in this case.
Can you address the argument that Heiser's own testimony indicated that she failed two of the three rules of thumb?
Yeah, the rules of thumb were used as a reference point. There's a, my mind just went blank. There's an area in which it should fall into, a scale basically that it should fall into. And if it falls into that scale, then it's an acceptable valuation. And that's what it was used for, as a checking point, a reference point, if you will. Not in terms of the value. She testified that the approach that she took in valuing this property was an acceptable method in accounting principles. And so that's what it was used for. It was not used or intended to be used as a second value or to show a value of this property. When you look at her report, it's pretty clear that she used the best information that she had available. There is ample evidence on the record to show that not only Ms. Heiser, but also Colleen Mitchell tried to get access to information to provide updated information, or at least more accurate information, to value this property, and was met with substantial resistance from Mr. Mansfield. And in fact, in several points in this case, he kind of plays the cat and mouse game. And in valuing this particular asset, he was doing the same thing. After the parties had separated or had filed the first divorce that had gone through, Mr. Mansfield immediately dismissed that divorce on the eve of trial, so to speak, and then another divorce was filed immediately after that. And in the midst of this 4 years of the first divorce, Mr. Mansfield was moving assets all over the place. He testified about his retirement account. He was taking money out of the account, which made then the valuation of this asset more difficult. And so Erica Heiser testifies that she tried to do what she could with the accurate information, but this divorce, the first part of it, was pending for 4 years. And so for Mr. Mansfield to say, oh, well, you could just go in and do an audit and get some numbers that way. You should have done that in order to get more accurate information. Well, Mr. Mansfield himself was the one that supplied the faulty information, first of all. And then to extend this divorce, which had already been at that time 4 years, and then added another year and a half on top of it, to say, just go ahead and do an audit, which would have been an astronomical task in this case, is not reasonable. The last thing I'll touch on here is the valuation date. And I think what's important on the record is that the valuation dates that are used as between the property that is similar is the same date. So the real estate is all valued at the same time. The retirement accounts for both parties, for Ms. Mitchell and for Mr. Mansfield, are valued at the same time. And that the date that is chosen is rationally related to each individual piece of property or asset that we're talking about. And I believe the court got it right when it did so. Again, Mr. Mansfield didn't supply any type of information that would have allowed the court to value the property, the retirement account specifically, at the date that he is requesting. If he wanted to do so, he sure could have, but he didn't.
Counsel mentioned there was evidence that the retirement accounts were around $250,000 at the time of in 2010. Was that testimony or was that exhibits?
You know, Your Honor, I can't remember as I stand here. Unfortunately, I didn't try this case, and so it's not on the tip of my head. And the volumes, as you all know, is very large. So I don't remember. I don't recall that being as a piece of evidence or as a piece of testimony. I think what that was kind of pieced together from an exhibit. I think it's Exhibit 98 in terms of using the numbers there, but I don't believe that was submitted as a specific piece of evidence. The final thing I'll touch on here today is a little bit of the due process arguments.
Before you get to that,
sure.
Quick question on the ultimate division of the marital estate, and there was an equalization payment ordered. Did that result in a true 50-50 division, or was it lopsided?
It was a little bit lopsided. My client received a little bit more of the assets in terms of the division.
Was there a reason given by the trial court for doing that?
I don't believe there was, although I think there is ample evidence on the record to support that type of decision by Judge O'Gorman, in that Mr. Mansfield, again, as I've touched on before, was very difficult in terms of his supplying of information. He was moving assets around and really trying to play the cat and mouse game, taking $150,000 out of the business, selling his share of the MEI stock to Mr. Zapata for a very minimal cost when the company was valued at $1.6 million. Those types of actions, I think, justified the award of my client of $600,000. And it also falls within that range that the court has set of a one-third to two-thirds property division. So I think it's within that range, and it's a fair award. On the due process arguments, I'll be very brief. I just wanted, generally speaking, with the arguments that Mr. Mansfield has raised, he has created or invited his own problems with the due process, and I think that he was given an ample opportunity to participate in this litigation and has not had his due process rights violated in any way. That's all I have, if you don't have any questions.
Good afternoon,
Your Honor.
How much time is remaining for the appellant?
27 seconds.
Okay.
Three points. The 2007 purported agreement is denied. It's barred by the statute of frauds. The law is clear she can't overcome the statute of frauds requirement to convey real estate. Secondly, Mr. Mansfield had an absolute right to dismiss. He acted on the advice of counsel. That testimony is uncontroverted. He was nevertheless punished. And that's a fair reading of the record in this case. The final point is perhaps a rhetorical, or not so rhetorical, question, and that is perhaps I should be permitted to testify, make some disparaging comments about the experts in this case, talk about they, implying that the appellee is involved as well. Don't permit any cross-examination. Let me introduce another 180 or so exhibits and then start the trial with a pro se litigant sitting there wondering what's going on, finding out later about the judge's relationship with Mr. Zapata, It's not disclosed on the record. The judge does not recuse himself. And every single decision that could have been made against Mr. Mansfield was made against Mr. Mansfield in favor of Dr. Mitchell, leading a reasonable person to conclude that there was not an even playing field in this case. And that's all we're asking for, is a remand to have an even playing field and get this case resolved that way.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel. You are excused and your case is submitted.